Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right, so I'm a feminist, but a small part of me believes I don't deserve a summer halal boyfriend unless I have a pedicure. Like, I can't leave the house with open-toe sandals and my nails are like, like, they haven't seen sunlight for 8 months and the cuticles are growing, like, I'm not actually going to even see nail. And then you get to the salon and the lady at the salon looks at you with, like, a look of, where have you lived? What have your feet seen? It really stresses me out. And that's why I'm like, I'm really glad this
Your toenails are very pretty.
Well, I specifically got them done because I was coming here and I'm like, people will see the nails.
Yeah.
And the thing is, nobody would have noticed, but then I would have apologized for them and then they would have looked and they would be like, oh yeah, I'm really sorry about your toes. Moving right along.
You go.
I am a feminist, but I'm committed to always smelling of citrus. I like... When people are like, oh, your natural odor, I'm like, no, I do not want natural odor. My natural odor does not belong anywhere in my vicinity. And if anything, I sweat baby powder, right? I was thinking about where this came from because I like have about 2 or 3 showers a day, right? And also, you know, Muslims wash with water. Like if you go to the loo, you wash with water. And, you know, so we like to be clean. I remember what I must have been like, I think it was the first time I had a little bit of armpit hair. I was like 7 or 8, right? I was like growing hair out of odd places for the first time. And I sat next to my mom. It was a hot day in Brisbane. Brisbane is humid, right? And my mom was like, my mom sniffed. She was like, is that you? And I was like, no. And I've been citrus smelling ever since.
I'm a feminist, but... When Grace Petrie told me that she couldn't play the Royal Albert Hall because she was already booked to headline a festival and she couldn't get out of it, I actually physically actively hoped that that festival was going to be like the Fyre Festival so that it would be cancelled and she could come and do the Royal Albert Hall. Every day I thought, hopefully it's the Fyre Festival. Hopefully they're having to refund the money. They're panicking, running around behind closed doors thinking, can we give everyone their money back? Hopefully, hopefully.
The Fyre Festival was the wildest. Like, I think only a white man could pull that kind of like bullshit off.
Oh yeah, totally.
Like nobody's giving some Muslim woman named Khadija that amount of money.
No.
Right. So you know, like it's just
and
not
if
happening.
They are, they're monitoring it.
Yeah, indeed.
They're not trusting her just to definitely pull off that many portaloos.
No.
They're like...
But if a Muslim woman named Khadija did run a festival, like, the food would be lit, right? Mm. There is none of this, I'm going to give you some styrofoam. No. You're going to be rolling out of there so sated you don't eat for a week. Mm. I'm a feminist, but I went head-to-head with a politician in Australia. She's, like, quite a well-known politician for racism and Islamophobia, and, you know, she was sort of saying Muslims need to be deported and all this sort of thing, and went head-to-head, and this video, the clip of us went viral, right? I got, like, 12 million views in less than a week, and everyone was, like, messaging me and be like, yes, we're so proud of you standing up for Islam, blah, 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 blah. And I saw this video everywhere. I'm like, my family in Sudan was sending it to me, and Sudan barely has internet, and they were getting it through, right? It was huge. And every single time I saw that video, the only thing I could think was, why did I wear that outfit? For fuck's sake. I had this light blue and yellow headscarf and then this like multicolored black and white shirt. I was like, nothing matches. Nothing matches. Your face, what, those glasses that I chose? Wrong set of glasses for that headscarf style. Like, I was on my period. I'd been on my period for like a month. And so I couldn't see the colors properly. Nothing. It's the only thing. People keep referring back to that video, and I'm like, never leave the house in an outfit you don't want to go viral, right? Because that will happen.
Great advice. Never leave the house in an outfit you don't want to go viral. Live from King's Place in London, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Yasmin Abdel-Majid, and very special guest, Mariam Khan, talking about belonging! This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White, with me is Yasmin Abdel-Majid, and we are talking about belonging!
Dun, dun, dun.
Have you had a guilty week or a feminist week?
I think it's been like a guilty week.
Yeah. It's been a guilty week. Okay. Week, yeah. Why?
None of the things I want to say are very halal. So, like, for the non-Muslims in the audience, it's not Muslim-friendly. So when my mum hears this, she's going to be like, I see what you've done when you've left the city, you know, gone on.
Anyway. Have you had a haram week?
I've had a haram week.
This is a bit like the guilty Muslim now, isn't it?
It is.
Have you had a halal week or
every
a haram
Muslim
week? Can we do the guilty Muslim?
So you know how there's Ramadan? Like, it was haramadan. Like,
hey!
It was a stop.
Is that your joke?
It is mine and every other Muslim I know. But we don't. Oh, okay. It's just one of those things. You just don't tell people about it. But, well, clearly, you know. Yeah. You just keep it close to your chest. As
yeah,
it were.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep. Hi, Mum.
All right, I'm going to do the... We can edit that out. Anything you don't want your mother to hear. Why don't we have a Yasmin Abdel-Majid's mother's edit and we send her that one?
Oh, my God. Okay, you don't know how happy that's just made me. I mean, there's probably other versions of my mum in here. I'm sorry in advance.
I am. Other versions of your mum?
Yeah, that's just...
Is that other Muslim mothers who might be in the audience judging you on her behalf?
Mm-hmm. They have a WhatsApp group. Where they were like, I saw her and she was talking about a boyfriend.
Which you don't have.
Never.
You've never had a boyfriend.
There was just a man that I saw many times in the shops.
There was a very handsome man in the dressing room, but I don't know if he belonged to anyone.
No, I just met him at the shops. And
in the shops?
And I was like, oh, brother, come through.
Gen Zs don't have a generation gap with their parents.
That's deeply disturbing to me.
Yeah.
Like, even if I see it on television, if I see a child talking to their parent, I'm like, ooh, you're going to get slapped. Like, that's coming back at you. But it doesn't, and I'm confused.
Yes, no.
I'm like, are you, like, disciplining them through, like, time out on your phone? Like, what is happening here?
Yeah, well, it's sort of illegal to hit children.
Indeed.
Yeah. Mm. I think it is. I mean, I think you probably can smack, but it's really gone out of fashion because people worry that it's violent.
Well, I mean, it is effective in my case, but no, too dark. Okay. Moving right along.
Belonging. Do you feel you belong?
I mean, it depends on what we're talking about. I belong to a large number of WhatsApp groups.
Sure. Yeah, I think everyone feels like they don't belong.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's what all of the sort of political things that are happening at the moment is about, people finding different things to belong to and deciding that actually nobody else is allowed to belong to the club that I'm part of.
Yeah.
Right? So essentially, you know, everyone's like, I want to be in a cult. That's the vibe, right? But nobody calls it that. They call it, like, the political party or whatever it might be.
So your theory is everyone wants to be in a cult? Because I actually was in a cult.
Yeah, no, it's
and
a sensitive word.
And it was not great.
It's never fun.
No.
Nobody's ever been like, the cult was a good time. No.
It's the fight between wanting so much to belong to a tribe that you want to obey all the rules of the tribe, which escalates into a cult, and wanting to be free and a free thinker.
Yeah, and I think, like, anyone who's from a collectivist society or something that is really bound, a group of people that are bound by a particular set of rules, like anyone who's been from a small village or any sort of community where everybody knows each other's business, all you want is your own agency. All you want is for nobody to know your business, right? But
100%.
Then if you're part of a society like we are in, here in the UK, where everyone's individualized and atomized, all you want to do is be part of a club, right? Or a community. And so I think maybe, like, we'll never be satisfied.
So it's always the fight between the desire to belong and the desire to be free.
Mm.
And we all live in that paradox and that tension the whole time. When we're accepted, we want to be ourselves. When we're not accepted, we feel lonely. So we're constantly battling those two things.
I think so.
Yeah.
What do you reckon? Feel about
it? I think we've solved it.
Yeah.
That's the end
of
the episode.
Yeah. I'm
yeah.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. It's Jessica Regan here with some news about our spring season for big speeches. Did you know the number one phobia that the British public have is public speaking? It's not surprising. It can be so daunting and terrifying. But in a very supported environment, during an incredibly joyful day, I promise you, you will find your voice with my help and with all the other Guilty Feminists who attend. We are doing two dates in March, the 1st and the 8th, in Walthamstow in the Rose and Crown. This space is not accessible. However, on the 29th of March, the 25th of April and the 10th of May, we are in Hold Space, which is an accessible venue in Highbury and Islington. We would love to see you there. The workshops have really taken off. And if you look for the hashtag Big Speeches on Twitter, you'll see all kinds of lovely testimonials and lovely things that people are saying about us. I love teaching this workshop. I'm so glad I have the platform to do it. So please do go online, look on the website, guiltyfeminist.com, to book and for more details. And I look forward to seeing you there.
Please welcome to the stage the incredible Yasmin Abdul-Majeed!
Where are you from? Right, it's a question that we hear all the time, and for various people it triggers various things. For me, I think I was born in Sudan, and my family moved to Australia when I was about a year and a half, and then I moved here to the UK. So when somebody asks me where I'm from, it's like existential crisis, right? But what it means is that I look for belonging in the strangest places, and I'm like happy with anything that people give me. Right, so Twitter, right? You're all on Twitter. Everyone's on Twitter. Nobody ever goes to Twitter for a safe space, right? Twitter is not the place you go to be like, you know what? I need a mental health day, right? Let me just log on to Twitter, right? No. But anyway, this particular day, I thought it might be a good idea. I was like trying something new. And a bunch of trolls. And I sort of get lots of men who aren't a huge fan of, you know, women or people of color or Muslims or anyone with an opinion. And so, you know, the usual kind of rubbish was filling my feed. And I was like, Yasmin, one caught my eye. It was like, Yasmin, you are a feminazi, scum of the earth, left wing, this, that, and the other. And I was like, ooh. And he was like, but it's a shame you're so hot. And I was like, oh my God, he thinks I'm hot. And then I was like, oh my God, Yasmin, you're like, why do you want to be fuckable to a troll? Like, what? You need to do some unlearning, right? Like, you're looking for belonging in the wrong place. So anyway, I DM'd him, and it turned out to be a Russian bot. So didn't go anywhere, unfortunately. As I mentioned, we moved to Australia. We were the second Sudanese family in Australia, right? So people, like, had no idea where Sudan was. They'd be like, Bruce, where do you think they're from? I don't know, Pam. My dad, determined to be friendly, determined to assimilate. He'd be like, "Salaam alaikum, brother." And Bruce would be like, "Don't eat salami, mate. That's not, I'm a steak man. And the other, so my dad also, he's an engineer. One of the things is that he really likes systems and processes. And in Sudan, there were no systems and processes. So his best, most favourite thing about the fact that we were living in Brisbane was that the systems and processes worked. Like bureaucracy, I was going to say something. It's weird to say about your dad. Bureaucracy made him hard. He was like, "I love bureaucracy." He was like, "I'll just do some graffiti. Call the graffiti line. They'll wash it off." He was like, "Someone was parked on the street in the wrong place. I called the council. They took it away." He was so involved, he decided to join the neighborhood watch. I was like, "Dad, they're watching us. We're the African gang, Dad." When you turn up to the meeting, they said, "Who called you?" No. Dad was just a little too keen. He even suggested that we like join the neighborhood camping trip. And my mum was like, "We left Sudan so we would not have to live in tents. Why would I do this?" And yes, indeed, tents and camping are for people who have a home to go back to. Ooh, grim. And so the thing is, right, I started to internalize this. And I was like, how do I become Australian? How do I, you know, belong? And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to do what the white people do. I'm going to ski, right? I'm going to learn to ski, right? So I Googled best place to ski. And then I also was like, you know, how about I learn a language that, you know, white people speak? I'll learn French, right? It's like a, you know, it's a nice colonial vibe. So I learned French, and then I Googled where to ski. And the first place I came up was this place called Zermatt, right? I was like, beautiful. Swiss, they speak French there somehow. Yeah, great. So I rock up. Firstly, Zermatt is in the German part of Switzerland. So nobody knew what the fuck I was saying. I was like, "Sava?" They're like, "Hi." That Swiss person was Australian, apparently. And also, I don't know. So for those who haven't gone skiing before, it is like white. It is white. You know, there are no black people on the mountain. To the point where I met a Swiss family who was like, "When we see a black person on the mountain, they're a sign of good luck." I was like, "I'm not a fucking leprechaun. I'm like right here. And why can't I get the luck, damn it?" What? The struggle was so real. And the other thing I did was I decided to do engineering, right? I did engineering at university, did mechanical engineering. Yes, to the engineers. Chicks in STEM. I don't know what the fuck that was. All right. Sorry. So because the thing is, being an engineer, it's like a really masculine sort of environment. And so I got a job in oil and gas, right? I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And I was the first female they hired in my department in Australia, right? So the boss is sat across the table from me. He's like, "Yasmin, do you need any specialist equipment because you're a woman?" And I was like, this is the question I've been waiting for my entire life. I was like, yes, I need trousers with more space for my booty. I was like, do you know how hard it is to fit into men's pants? I was like, I pancake ass, constantly. This long crotch. He looked at me with this utter look of confusion. Like he had never thought that a woman might need a different set of clothes. He was like, "I'm sorry, we can't help you." It's like, the fuck did you offer then, Eric? Fucking Steve. All of them, just like disciples. Paul, Peter, who the fuck knows, right? So I go onto the rig, and I'm driving, so my first rig was like a land rig. And I was driving, my colleague sat next to me, he's like, "Yasmin, I never worked with a woman before." I was like, "Mm-hmm. This is apparent." He's like, "So I just have like one question, like it's been playing on my mind. Are you going to be able to lift the tools?" And I was like, "Mate, you're a Filipino man half my size. I can lift you up. I can bench press you. Do you want me to, I can throw you right out of the fucking car right now if you want." He was like, "Understood." And the best part is that, like, they just had no idea how to deal with me. They honestly, like, and I would hear them on the radio if we were, they'd be like, "She's coming. Have you seen her? Nah, what does she look like? Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh, she's got something on her head. I can't really see. But is she hot though?" And then I'd be like, "I can hear ya." You'd be like,
She can hear us. So are you hot? Of course, you fucking idiot. I'm bloody fantastic. Best thing you ever saw.
They'd be like, so how did you get here? Did you, like, go to jail or something? Why? They just couldn't comprehend that I had chosen that job voluntarily. And I was like, well, I thought it was a good idea, but now you're making me question whether or not it was. But it was nice because I got to spend my time in an environment that felt like, even though I didn't look like anyone, they eventually made me feel like I belonged. Fast forward a few years, and I end up living here in London, in the UK. Now, in order to belong here in London, I've learned that there's a very special sort of like test that you have to do. It's the Pottermore quiz. I don't know if anyone has heard. It's like to find out which Hogwarts house you're in, okay? And I have known ever since I read Harry Potter at the, you know, sprightly age of 11 or when the fuck I found Chamber of Secrets in the library and was like, oh my God, I am in Gryffindor. I am so, and my Patronus is a Black Panther. I've known this. It's in my soul, right? The essence of my soul is a Black Panther. Before it was cool, right? Before Wakanda was a thing people knew about. Sidebar, one of my friends went to an event the other day and he was like, yeah, they had it up like Wakanda. I'm like, or in any other African country that actually exists. He was like, oh, yeah, I guess maybe. I'm like, did they have vibranium cocktails? What? Anyway, so Pottermore test. Me and all my new London friends gathered together. They all do the test. They're all in fucking Gryffindor. And I'm like, it's because we belong together. My friend gets some thoroughbred horse as her Patronus. Somebody gets an eagle. I'm like, great, you're all going to be shocked when I bring out my Black Panther. I do the test meticulously, carefully, taking thought with every single question and answer. Turns out, I'm a fucking Hufflepuff. Hufflepuff? I'm like, it sounds like a weird fart. Hufflepuff, what? And I'm like, it's fine. My Patronus will redeem me, right? It will I'll be the greatest Hufflepuff there ever was. My Patronus is an animal that I had to Google. Four letters. First one starts with a letter even weirder than Y, which is mine. I'm a vole. A vole is a rodent. It's a rat. My essence is a fucking rat. And it's a cute rat, but who the fuck cares? It's a rat. So my conclusion, folks, is that Pottermore is racist.
Hello, guilty feminists. It's Deborah. Just wanted to say a huge, huge thank you to everyone who came out for the America, Canada, Australia and New Zealand tour. We have done our last date, very sadly. But if you are in Tauranga or nearby in New Zealand, I'm doing a show called Doing the Business on Tuesday night at Bay Court for the Cambodian Charitable Trust that helps girls in Cambodia who are living in deep poverty get some education and opportunity. So come along to that. Some tickets left, but not many. Now, if you enjoyed Grace Petrie on the Australian or New Zealand tour, if you didn't get to the Australian New Zealand tour, but you know Grace Petrie, or you're like, oh my God, I want to hear her songs. I want to hear Black Tie tonight live. Then she has shows in Newcastle, Illawarra, Canberra, Fitzroy, Melbourne, Port Fairy, Cronulla, Sydney, Katoomba in Australia. And those are all from the 27th of February till the 15th of March. And you can find the dates and buy tickets on gracepetrie.com. That's Grace, P-E-T-R-I-E.com. She is a fantastic performer. Anyone who sees her knows that. So go, 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 go.
and get tickets fast before they all go. Bring 20 or 30 of your closest friends because hashtag feminism. We will be the Guilty Feminist at the WOW Festival, Women of the World Festival, Saturday, 7th of March at the southbankcentre.co.uk. It's going to be a big old show. Susan McComber is co-hosting. Bridget Christie is doing stand-up. We've got an incredible musician and an amazing guest that I'm not allowed to tell you yet. So get tickets now or they're all going to go. It's at southbankcentre.co.uk. You can find the link on our website. Global Pillage is back. Woohoo! Our diversity-based comedy panel show. And you can buy tickets for that at King's Place on the 21st of March and the 4th and 5th of April. They're 4 p.m. shows. So it's a weekend. You come along. You have lunch. Afterwards, you come to Global Pillage. You get to shout out, be the hive mind of the audience. We've got some incredible comedians on. Afterwards, you can still make that party. And if you want to, you can come up and say hi afterwards and get a selfie with me, get your book signed, anything like that. Global Pillage, you can find it at globalpillage.net, and you can get tickets at the King's Place website, as always. Our UK tour kicks off on the 1st of March at the Hammersmith Apollo. We've never played that venue before. That's going to be exciting. And then we're going all over the UK. Get tickets at guiltyfeminist.com. And the movie that I wrote and have a cameo in and that Cindy V is in, Say My Name, is now available to buy or rent on UK iTunes and YouTube. Go to guiltyfeminist.com for links. You can also buy merch if you've got a birthday coming up or you just fancy a Guilty Feminist tea towel, apron, notebook, t-shirt, anything like that. There's all sorts on the Guilty Feminist website and the money goes into our pot for good things. Also, don't forget to choose love. Check in on what Help Refugees are doing and what they're asking you to do in terms of contacting your MP. And go to Right for Rights on the Amnesty website and check out what you can do for human rights. And now back to the podcast.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Our guest today is the editor of It's Not About the Burqa, an anthology of essays by Muslim women on faith, feminism, sexuality and race. Please welcome to the stage, Mariam Khan!
Give it up!
So, Yasmin, you're actually in Mariam's book.
Indeed. It's an anthology of essays and Mariam was kind enough to asked me to be one of the essayists, so it's pretty awesome. Tell us how you decide to put this together.
So the anthology is called It's Not About the Burqa, and I have a lot of things to say about the title, should you ask me, but it might go on longer than the show. Basically, the anthology came together when I heard our idiot Prime Minister, or ex-Prime Minister, David Cameron, who basically said, Muslim women are traditionally submissive, or it was reported that he had said that. And I remember thinking, I don't recognise who he's talking about. And there was a huge, huge social media backlash, and that was one place I sort of found a belonging. And I remember seeing Muslim women holding up placards, and it said, war survivor and PhD student and mother, and all of these things that they sort of had an identity with, but Muslim women were never described in those ways. We were never allowed to have those narratives. And I thought, what can I do about it? So
after fighting the good fight in publishing, I decided to put together a collection of essays. And just because I really, really, really wanted people to realise that there was more than a singular narrative around Muslim women, I thought, well, if I put 17 different women in there, they physically can't deny that we're different. So that's where it came from.
And what surprised you about the different views that women in your book had and contributed to?
I think part of being the editor, the thing that surprised me was how narrow my understanding had been of what it meant to be a Muslim woman and what it meant to be a woman as well. And I think pulling in different voices and narrative and lived experiences and pulling in people who, because not everyone in the book agrees with each other. Yeah. And we've had...
But that's really important.
It's incredibly important.
Because we don't expect white women, for example, to all agree on anything.
Yeah.
But we do have this othering that goes on, which is, well, Muslim women fit under a category.
What is the official press release from the Muslim women?
Yeah.
Right.
And of course...
And they're always in headscarves and burqas, that's it.
Literally. And it's always the same one.
Yes.
It's like we wash them, you know.
They have her on speed dial, that's it.
You always have an incredible array of different, very glamorous headscarves.
I mean, it failed me on the day of my viral video. But apart from that...
No. Yeah. The day of your viral video was a catastrophe.
It was. Yeah, but apart from
that... But 12 million hits, though, in a week. Still, 12 million people have seen the worst headscarf you've ever worn.
Part of me thinks they were sharing because they were like, wow, she actually put that on her head. And not from a religious point of view, but just like the fashion police were like, astaghfirullah.
I actually really like your headscarves because they're really distracting. So I just look at them and do the fence. When
Thanks.
I'm like, what shall I do? I'll look at Yasmin's scarf.
So
how I get things through security. No, it's a joke. It's a joke. Oh, my God.
Good luck trying to leave the country next time.
What did you write about, Yasmin, in the book? Was it about how to get things through security in a headscarf?
Indeed. I was like, you just eat, like right in the court, so they'll pat it, but they can't get to the... No. This is how I get in trouble. This is how, like, I'll be at customs and they'll be like, so... We're all guilty feminist listeners here at TSM. Anyway, I wrote about how I really believed that hard work was the thing that, you know, got you equality. And it was a belief that I had that you could outperform your Muslimness, you could outperform your gender, you could outperform your race, all these sorts of things. If you just work hard enough, people will, like, see how great you are. And I think it also comes from my dad, who used to be like... My dad had this funny complex because he migrated to Australia... I think he was like in his early 30s. And so he'd kind of developed already as a man. And he was like, oh, white people. I feel sorry for them because they don't realize how great we are. So any racism he experienced, he sort of like felt bad for the racists. Because he was like, oh, you just don't realize that I'm gold. Right, like that was the kind of vibe. And so like I inherited a little bit of that, which, you know, weird complex. Not usually what people expect. But then, obviously, what I then learned through life experience is that you hit a certain point and you can't outperform. Like, all of those gender biases and structural inequalities come right into play. And that shocked me. It kind of shook my understanding of the world. And I think it probably, ironically, Rupert Murdoch radicalized me. I'm getting quite a look of confusion from Deb. So
No, I'm just fascinated.
Essentially, so Rupert Murdoch is a media guy. By media guy, he owns most of the media in Australia. And
he owns a lot here too.
He owns a lot here.
I think he owns...
This is going to be great for
everyone. He owns a lot in America.
He owns a lot around the world.
Yeah.
He has immense amounts of power. Effectively, I thought that if I did well enough, even people like the right-wing press would be like, Yasmin's great, you know, we should let the Muslims in. You know, that was kind of the way that I thought about it. And then definitely didn't work that way. And I was like, oh, no matter how good I am, they're not going to back me. They're not going to be on my side. So why should I try? Mm. And so effectively, I became a much more radical version of my younger self because of the Australian and the right-wing press alongside
Sort of like how your experiences made you take ownership of your womanhood as well. Because the thing that you'd been made to hate was your womanhood and your identity as a woman, and if you took ownership of it and you were the one sort of leading the narrative around yourself on that, you could make that a positive force. And I think often that's sort of weaponized against us, our own womanhood. That's part of the essay.
I think, yeah, and that idea works across intersections, right? So many of our identities we are taught to minimize and to hate and to think is not good enough. Mm. But actually, if we turn around, we're like, oh, the fact that I'm a woman or the fact that I'm whatever other intersection, queer, Muslim, they're all our superpowers. Mm. And people are terrified of us owning that. That's why they gaslight us. That's why they essentially make us hate that part of ourselves. But I think throughout all of the essays, actually, it was this element of women in whatever fight they were fighting, deciding to take ownership.
And I think there's an element of relatability in it. But I'm not going to lie, like, as much as I would love for every white woman to read it, I wrote that book for myself, and I wrote it for every Muslim woman, and I wrote it for every person of colour, and all the stories that we told in there about sex and relationships and about being a queer Muslim and, like, your religiosity and, like, white feminism sucking, or toxic white feminism anyway, and all of those things, I really wished somebody had let me have the space to have those conversations, mm-hmm. and they didn't, and that's what I wanted, and that's what we created. We created something like a sisterhood, because the first time we all met was at the launch and we were psychotic, really.
It was wild. Like, we'd heard about each other vaguely, but then we all got to... And I think the other thing to realise is that so often, you know, as a Muslim woman who has any sort of a voice, you're asked to speak on behalf of. Mm. You don't get the chance. They're usually, all right, we've got one Muslim woman, that's enough. They don't think, maybe they all have various different ideas. We should get two or three. Mm. And then we might get... The best Muslim woman panel I've ever been on was in Dorky, Ireland, which is not what I expected. But they had four Muslim women on a panel and they asked us to speak about feminism. None of us agreed with each other, but it was the most interesting discussion because of that.
Yeah.
And we didn't have to start from a basis of, should we even be allowed to exist? Which is the basis so many times we have these conversations
from. Or like
from.
Proving that you're human, because a lot of the events that I've been doing and sort of I'm more recently frustratedly sort of put on social media. I don't use Twitter because, like you said, it's really toxic and really shit. But like...
Unless somebody says you're hot.
Wow.
It's fine. They're usually
I've got
bots.
That filter on that turns off the crazies. So. Yeah. Smart. Well, mostly. Anyway, on Instagram, and I was sort of saying how taxing it is to, even at events, have to sort of start from the point of, I am human, you should empathize with me, not even be able to go into, okay, so white feminism institutionally empowers certain groups of women. And yes, I want to be a feminist, but sometimes it doesn't work for me. And you need to recognize that so we can move forward. And I'm tired of this idea that if it happens for you, then we can all be carried forward. Because if that was actually the reality of it, we would be much fucking further along right now.
So tease that out, right? Because your essay was about white feminism. Mm. But I remember we talked recently and you were like, nobody wants to talk about it with me.
Yeah. I've thought about this so much now. I think I just have conversations constantly about it with myself. Anyway, so I've thought about this, and I think that part of the reason on the side of sort of like the Muslim sisterhood is because we're so overwhelmed with having to deal with the racism and the Islamophobia and the body politics and our bodies, you know, being used as political grounds. We're like, oh yeah, the white women, who cares about them? But like, there is a huge issue, and the issue is that the thing that a lot of Muslim women align themselves with is feminism, and it doesn't work for us. So my essay is called Feminism Needs to Die, and a lot of people are shocked by my essay, because in my essay I basically talk about how I came to feminism and I was like so freaking excited, and then I remember, because back then I used to like tweet so much, and I remember I read a tweet by Caitlin Moran, and somebody had asked her in an interview about her HBO Girls series and about why the cast wasn't diverse. And honestly, this tweet still exists somewhere.
Lena Dunham. They asked her about, was she going to bring this up to Lena Dunham?
And she was basically, I don't fucking care. Like, I mean, I don't think those were her exact words, but like that amount of like, it doesn't bother me. Like, it's got nothing to do with me. Why should I even bother? And it's kind of like this feminist icon that all the feminists around me had been like, oh my God, Kate Moran, like, she's an amazing woman. She's an amazing feminist. She's fighting for all of us. And I'm like, she's not fighting for me. And I think through feminism, what I realized, instead of empowering me, which I thought it was initially going to do, it sort of made me feel dejected. It made me feel like I didn't belong in that movement. And it wasn't a lot of women that I met, white women, had an issue with me being a Muslim, and I had a space in my faith, and my faith had a space for my feminism, but those women didn't want me in their like idea of what feminism was, and they didn't want my faith in that. And for me, I couldn't. Being a feminist is really taxing for me, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So that's what my essay talks about.
I wonder if Catelyn would still say that now, because I think that was previous to a lot of... I don't know. I genuinely don't know, but I suspect she might have shifted that idea now because it was previous to a lot of the sort of intersectional feminism that's out there. I think she felt like she was being asked to ask another woman about her, not without justifying it, which I am. I wonder if she felt she was being asked to ask another woman about her creation and
I think this comes back.
Justify yourself. And she was like, it's not for me to do that.
Yeah.
And I wonder if she would say something different now.
No, because the fact that that tweet still exists, because from time to time I actually go and look at it, because I'm that much fun. That's what's going on in my life, guys. I think that the fact that it exists, and it's not just her though. Like, our society is built up in a way where it benefits men. Mm-hmm. And then when it's not benefiting men, it's benefiting white women. It's institutionally set up to deliver to a certain group of women. And I'm talking about, like, in my essay, I make this, like, long list disclaimer. So white, straight, middle class. I'm talking about those white women. And I'm talking about how they never know the struggle because they don't have to go through it. And so any time I'm in front of those people, I have to first prove I'm human enough for them to empathize. Second, try and get my point across. And third, without jeopardizing the audience, like, try not to hurt their feelings in any way. And I really, really don't give a fuck about that. Like, this weekend, I was at an event, and I was talking about white women. And it was really interesting, actually. I was generalizing. Yes, I was. And this man decided to pipe up, and he said...
He
didn't.
Well,
did he not hashtag not all women you?
Yeah, well, yes.
Hashtag not all white women.
After, me and my friend decided we really wanted to get shagged, so that's why he did it. But basically, he was like, but you're talking about how you don't like Muslim women being generalised, but aren't you generalising all white women by saying this? So I read out the passage, basically, in my essay where it says, actually, I'm talking about white women as an institution, and, like, the fact that all you got from this hour-long talk was, but not all white women. It's the same as when we say men are shit, and men are like, but not all white men. So, yes. But, yeah, so having to deal with that.
Yeah, I've learnt a lot in the last 3.5 years about how much white women benefit from the system. I often think that I started this podcast to wallow in my own oppression, and what I've learned about more than anything is my own privilege. And I'm increasingly aware of the truth of that, that the advantages that we have, and I'm increasingly understanding the advantages that I have over men of colour, like, all the time. And I'm like, oh, I'm so protected by this system. If I cry in public, people will run around me and go, oh. If I run towards law enforcement in a panic, they're definitely not going to shoot me.
Yeah, look,
or even in America. Even in America, they wouldn't.
Anytime I run, people are like, if she's running, we definitely have to run. They're like, whatever she's running away from, it is not good. Run with her. Like, nobody's like, oh, she might need help. No.
Yeah, no, I'm aware of what you're saying is completely true.
It's the guilt thing that gets me. Like, I had a really, really frustrating conversation with a friend afterwards because she thought that I'd come across quite strong, and I thought, and because, and I'd been quite unforgiving, because I remember at the end of me answering the guy's question, I was like, it's probably not the answer you're wanting, but it's the one you're going to get.
Tell him, sis, tell him.
And then I moved on, and then she said, you know, but you should break it down and help them understand, and I'm like, no, they understand, Google exists, like, they're here, they should try harder. For me, it's getting to the point where I'm thinking, if the method of, oh, but we should break it down and be nice about it, if that worked, we wouldn't still be having these conversations.
How have things changed since the release of the book? Have you seen changes in your, when you've been touring and so on?
I think that there are conversations that have happened, potentially that this book is now triggering, but potentially not in the same fashion. I feel like when I approach things, I'm more unforgiving. So people feel not attacked, but they feel sort of... I remember saying at an event that I went to that if you don't feel really angry and frustrated when you're leaving, then you haven't attended an event that I've gone to, which is my aim because I feel like not enough is changing fast enough for us to be able to make a difference. Well, I'm a pessimist, right? But I do think that it's a privileged illusion to think that one book can change something. Because for that one book to come into play, a lot of things had to happen. And a lot of, like, Allah had to, like, bless things. And, like, a lot of people had to come together and, like, really push it. And these opportunities don't come up enough to actually make measurable change. I think it would be a lie if I sat here and said things will change, but I think that we can all make more efforts to change things. But no, I mean, Boris Johnson's still talking shit about Muslim women, so.
Yo, Boris, like, what is his deal?
I mean,
nobody knows.
I find it
literally
so,
nobody
yeah,
knows.
Yeah, no, I find it I so, fascinating
so fascinating how,
like, how
he white can be
men
taking
from
over.
Particular echelons in society fail upwards. Like, oh, I can't do anything upwards. I can't do anything upwards. Yeah. Literally, if I fall, I will my face on the ground. Right? There's no like version of like falling upwards for people who aren't.
You
like,
will
Boris.
Not fail into being prime minister.
I mean, can you imagine? Can you?
Yeah, he's done that. He put like, 350 million
time,
a week for the NHS on the side of a bus. The other day, Jeremy Hunt said, "I am prepared to Brexit without a deal. I'm warning you." It will be worse than the 2008 financial crash, but I'm willing to do it. How have we gone from 350 million more of the NHS a week on a bus to I'll do it, but it'll be worse than the worst financial disaster? That's not what we voted for. Not that I voted that way anyway, but not what anybody voted for. This is not what anybody voted for. Even if you voted
vote
Leave.
There was no deal on the table. Like, you know, they've got more votes than us.
Anytime someone brings things up, I'm like, yo, the men are continuously going on about, you know, how it's not their time or, like, it's so hard to be a white man.
Mm. Oh, because there's allowed to be...
I want that struggle. I mean, like, if I can pick a type of struggle, I want that kind of struggle.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, white men leading shit has gotten us where exactly? Like, I think it's time they let a dark-skinned Muslim woman run the show, right? I think at that point, you know... Maybe.
I wonder
at
when...
At least everyone would be fed, right? And they'd have somewhere to sleep because no, like, it would be a shame on her. She'd be like,
yeah,
listen, just come to my house.
Like, the next white people crisis. Like,
but what is a white
crash,
people crisis?
This would be the next thing. They'll have, like, a crisis of belonging.
Aww. I wonder what that feels like.
Which brings us beautifully to the end of the episode. Belonging. Thank you so, so much. We can all buy your book. Where should we get your book?
Any good bookstore.
Any good bookstore?
Probably not Amazon, but it's okay if you can
only
buy from Amazon.
Okay, it's okay if you go with Amazon, but don't. Okay.
Have you seen Jeff Bezos? I don't, like, no.
I now just imagine somebody scurrying to get the book. And they're on this sort of hourly rate.
Yeah, it's grim. They don't even get toilet breaks.
No, they're on some
avoid
kind of...
Avoid Amazon at all costs. The Amazon, lovely. Very different experiences.
You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis-White, guest co-host Yasmin Abdel-Majid, and our very special guest, Mariam Khan. The recording engineer was Grundy Liz Ibra. Music was by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Selinski for The Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Zoe, Sally, and everyone at King's Place, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com.
I belong to a large number of WhatsApp groups.
Sure.
It depends, right? Like, sometimes we feel like we're really part of something.
Sorry, it's probably not helping that I'm on my phone while
you're
trying to ask
that
question.
Right? You're doing that thing.
So do you feel like you belong?
How's your day?
Sorry, I'm on the Love Island WhatsApp group.
Yeah. I'm voting.
Are you on it?
I know you don't like Michael, but I'm voting.
No, I'm really sorry. I was bringing my I'm a Feminist butts up, and then I realised I hadn't put it on aeroplane. And Phoebe Waller-Bridge texted me back because I congratulated her about her Emmys nominations.
See?
Yeah. So I forgot you were talking.
I mean, that happens.
So in terms of the belonging situation, I'm really sorry. I was congratulating another white woman on her Emmys.
Indeed, yeah. I was talking about how I don't feel like I belong, and she was like, a white woman messaged me.
I'm so sorry. I can only apologise. Is there anyone else I can offend in this audience or on this stage tonight? Would anyone like me? Just put your hand up if you'd like me to.
She's a connoisseur.
Hello, Guilty Feminista. This is Sarah Baron, stand-up comic. If my name rings a bell, I have appeared on this wonderful podcast before. Namely, one time I told you about a friend of mine who had a weird older boyfriend who told me about the color of her vagina. It was crazy. Anyway, I'm here to tell you about the fact that I will be at London Soho Theatre from the 9th to the 21st of March doing my Edinburgh 2019 show, Enemies Closer, every night at 9:30 p.m. I really hope that if you like this podcast, you might just like my show. So hope to see you there. Goodbye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.